Good morning. My name is Rob, and I'll be your conference facilitator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to Mandalay Resource Corporation's fourth quarter and year-end 2020 financial results call. Joining us on the call is Dominic Duffy, President, Chief Executive Officer, and Director of Mandalay Resources. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero from your telephone keypad. Please note that this conference is being recorded. This call contains forward-looking statements which reflect the current expectations or beliefs of the company based on information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties that may cause the actual results of the company to differ materially from those discussed in the forward-looking statements. Factors that could cause actual results or events to differ materially from the current expectations are disclosed under the heading Risk Factors and elsewhere in the company's annual information form dated March 30, 2020, available on SEDAR and the company's website. I'll now turn the conference call over to Mr. Dominic Duffy. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Rob. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. Today on the call is Nick Dwyer, Mandalay's Chief Financial Officer, and he's going to be going through the financials with you. I also have Chris Davis, Mandalay's Vice President of Exploration and Operational Geology, to give you a quick update on where we stand on our current exploration program and the plans we have going forward. Mandalay released its fourth quarter and full year 2020 financial results at market close yesterday. You can find our consolidated financial statement and MDA on the Mandalay Resources website and also under our profile on sedar.com. Mandalay Resources delivered another excellent quarter in Q4 2020. We leveraged our strong operational performance, a 32% increase in realized gold prices, a good cost control to achieve one of our best quarters on record. Before I get into our operations, though, I wanted to take a moment to have Nick Dwyer speak on our financial performance and just how significant this quarter in 2020 as a whole was for the company. Are you on the line, Nick?
Yep. Thanks, Tom. So, Mandalay had an outstanding Q4 in 2020 year. The Q4 2020 compared to Q4 2019, we doubled our quarterly consolidated revenue to $45.3 million. We grew our quarterly adjusted EBITDA by over 400% to $25.3 million, which was the third highest result in company history. We also grew our consolidated production by 47%. We lowered our all-in sustaining costs by 14%. And we generated an adjusted net income of $12.1 million. The company closed the 2020 year with $34.2 million in cash. This cash balance was similar to the amount at the end of Q3. However, it's important to note that the year-end amount does not include an additional $5 million payment relating to a delayed shipment from Costerfield. And this would normally have been received by the year end, but it was received early January. The fourth quarter was capped off by a tremendous full year in which the company demonstrated dramatically improved financial results. For the full year 2020, we generated $179 million in revenue, which is our highest annual result since 2016. And that was when we had three operating mines rather than the two that we have today. We generated a record adjusted EBITDA of $94.2 million and a record EBITDA margin of 53%. We generated $72 million in net cash flows from operating activities, generated $25 million in free cash flow, which again excluded the previously mentioned delayed $5 million shipment from Costerfield, and produced an adjusted, record adjusted net income of US$43.7 million or Canadian 51 cents income per share, which is the equivalent to 25% of the market cap of the company at the close of 2020. Thanks. I'd like to turn the call back to you, Dom.
Thanks, Nick. With four consecutive quarters of remarkable operational and financial improvement, Mandalay has not only demonstrated that it has turned the corner, We have now shown that this turnaround is sustainable. This continued performance highlights not only the successful execution of our operational strategy at Costerfield, which was to reach, develop, and ramp up the high-grade production at Youle, but it also demonstrates our positive growth trajectory and underlying long-term value and cash-generating potential for both sites. Turning to our operations, on a consolidated basis, Mandalay produced 27,350 ounces of gold equivalent in the fourth quarter of 2020 at a cash and all-in sustaining cost of $930 and $1,350 per ounce, respectively. Mandalay's consolidated production rose by 47% compared to Q4 2019. This production lift was driven in large part by high-quality, low-cost production from Costerfield, most notably from the Youle vein. For the full year 2020, Mandalay met its upwardly revised production guidance from 100 to 109,000 ounces of equivalent gold. We ended up producing 103,440 ounces. This was a 35% year-over-year increase at significantly improved cash and all-in sustaining costs of $843 and $1,254 per ounce, respectively. At Costerfield in Q4 2020, Costerfield produced 12,230 ounces of gold and 860 ounces of antimony for 15,100 ounces of gold equivalent produced. This is nearly double the production over the same period in 2019, where Costerfield produced 4,750 ounces of gold and 684 tons of antimony for 7,600 ounces of gold equivalent. Costerfield's cash cost per ounce of gold equivalent produced $668, down 38% from the year ago quarter, and an all-in sustaining costs were $1,077. That's 34% lower than Q4 2019. This resulted in Costerfield posting yet again a record quarterly adjusted EBITDA of $20 million, which surpassed the previous record of $18.8 million set in Q3 2020. For the full year 2020, Costerfield generated $68 million of adjusted EBITDA. The uplift in production and reduced costs in Q4 2020 were largely grade-driven, as our process grades averaged 11.2 grams per ton gold and 3.5% antimony. For the full year 2020, Costerfield produced 44,960 ounces of gold and 3,900 tons of antimony for 58,150 ounces of equivalent gold. That's 131% production increase year over year. Costerfield's cash and all-in sustaining costs for 2020 were $634 and $1,010, respectively. Looking ahead, we expect to see a similar production profile and continued high grades at Costerfield over the course of 2021. And we are guiding annual gold equivalent production of between 53 and 60,000 ounces. At Björkdal, we continue to deliver stable, profitable performance. The mine produced 12,250 ounces in Q4 2020, which was slightly higher than the 10,990 produced in the fourth quarter of 2019. Cash and all-in sustaining costs were slightly higher at $1,251 and $1,016 per ounce, respectively, versus $1,071 and $1,460 per ounce a year ago. This resulted in quarterly revenue of, in Q4 2020, of 19 million and 6.4 million in adjusted EBITDA. For the full year 2020, Björkdal generated 81.5 million in revenue and 32 million in EBITDA, both improvements over 2019. For the full year 2020, Björkdal produced 45,296 ounces of gold, down 12% year over year. Björkdal's cash costs and all-in sustaining costs for 2020 were $1,112 and $1,435 respectively. We continue to execute our new operating strategy at Björkdal to focus on maximising the delivery of higher margin ore feed to the mill for greater profitability. This means boosting the overall mix of high-grade underground ore and supplementing the mill capacity with low-cost, low-grade stockpile ore. While this transition is still underway, we have seen four consecutive quarters of steadily increasing underground tonnage delivered to the mill. We are working to ramp up our production and haulage of underground ore with the goal of delivering 1.1 million tonnes of high-grade underground ore to the mill per annum. Haulage numbers are definitely trending positively. In the last three quarters, we have seen a positive lift in the underground tonnage. We are also developing further into the high-grade low levels of the Aurora zone. However, we are seeing some delays in stoping in Aurora, as the majority of the ore drives are extending further than originally expected, as further mineralization is found at the extents of the deposits. We expect Björkdal's performance both operationally and financially to improve significantly as we execute this strategy and have guided annual gold production of 2021 of 52,000 to 57,000 ounces. Overall, I'm pleased with the current state of our operations heading into 2021. Both are in strong positions, stable, growing and generating significant cash flow. As we mentioned in our production and cash guidance released in January, we expect to take our annual consolidated production from 103,000 ounces in 2020 to between 105,000 to 117,000 ounces in 2021. We are also guiding improved cash and all-in sustaining costs of $800 to $1,000 per ounce and $1,100 to $1,300 per ounce respectively. On other points for operation, well, one other point, sorry, is that the first quarter of 2021, we will be restarting our processing plant at Cerro Bayo to process mineralized waste dumps that can have value in the current metal price environment. It is a three-month scheduled trial that could be continued further in the event that of the economics of the program proving feasible. Now I'd like to move on to the exploration front. Subsequent to quarter end, we reported some exciting exploration success, and I'd like to turn the call over to Chris Davis to talk about these highlights. Chris?
Thanks, Dominic. Last month, we announced encouraging results from our extension drilling at the high-grade Yule deposit at Costerfield. The drilling, which was intended to further delineate the recently discovered high-grade southern gold domain, returned results that convey a link between the current mine development and provide strong indications that the high grades continue through this zone. Some of the drilling highlights include 264 grams per tonne gold and 19.7% antimony over a true width of 0.23 of a metre. And 94.7 grams per tonne and 16.4% antimony over a true width of 0.05 metre. We also encountered new high grades to the north of Yule at depth, grading at 345 grams per tonne gold over 19.7 and 19.7% antimony over a true width of 0.11 of a meter, and 316 grams per ton gold over a true width of 0.22 of a meter. But I guess most excitingly, step out drilling down plunge on Yule returned grades of 460 grams per ton gold over a partially recovered vein, which was 0.11 of a meter. This intercept is 130 meters down plunge of the previous high grade intercepts and could represent the anticipated beginning of a new structural domain at Yule. At the Yorkdale, drilling over the last few months has been focused on the eastern and depth extension of Aurora, as well as the eastern extension of Lake Zone. Significant and exciting results have been received in both programs, with highlights of 4.8 grams per tonne gold over a true width of 2.5 metres at Aurora, and 119 grams per tonne gold over a true width of 0.44 of a metre at Lake Zone. Also earlier this week, we announced our resource and reserves updates for both of our operations, with positive results at each. We extended our mine life at Costerfield to 4.5 years, increasing our mineral reserves for gold and antimony by 25% and 22% respectively, net of depletion. Most significant is that we nearly doubled our proven reserve at the high-grade Yule vein, which was the driving force behind the company's turnaround in 2020. We also maintained a long mine life until 2029 at the Yorkdale and increased our underground mineral reserves, which are slated to be the primary source of mill feed going forward. Looking to 2021, we have budgeted the largest combined exploration expenditure in the company's history of $9 million US. At Costerfield, our focus is threefold: the growth of high-grade resources at depth on Yule, drill testing of the exciting Yule analog environments at depth under Cuffley, Augusta and Brunswick deposits, including the deeper Fosterville-style environment, and advancement of the promising Browns and Western Corridor projects. At Bjorkdale, we will be focusing on delivering higher-grade resources and extending the Aurora system, as well as building on Lake Zone and Main Zone resources. We have also identified a number of surface targets, which will be undertaking bedrock geochemical analysis and diamond drill testing. Thank you. I'd like to hand back to Dominic.
Thanks, Chris. Before I take any questions, I'd like to take a moment just to revisit our main corporate priorities in our program on each. On our last earnings call, I laid out four core areas of focus for Mandalay. First, we want to maximise our cash flow from operations. We want to continue to take advantage of the record high gold price environment. This means continuing to grow production at Costerfield and ramping up high margin ounces from Bjorkdale underground. As Nick mentioned, we generated $72 million in net cash flows from operating activities this year, driving record adjusted net income of $34.7 million and $25 million in free cash flow. Next, we want to unlock further value and extend mine life through exploration. At Costerfield, this is extending the mine life at the high-grade Yule deposit and unlocking further value through new discoveries. At Bjorkdale, our objective is to continue to delineate and grow Aurora and other high-grade ore sources. We're pleased to have grown our mine life at Costerfield and maintained a 9-plus year life at Bjorkdale while growing underground mineral reserves. Our third priority is de-risking our balance sheet. We plan to significantly strengthen our balance sheet in the coming quarters. As of quarter end, our debt position was $59 million. It's worth noting that despite us paying $4.5 million towards our hedging program in 2020, mainly driven by the recent strengthening, and mainly driven by the recent strengthening of the Australian dollar relative to the US dollar, we anticipate receiving proceeds from the Australian dollar gold forward contracts in the near term. Our improved operations and cash generation allowed us to grow our cash position to $34.2 million a year in 2020, not including the $5 million shipment receivable that was recovered in early January 2021. We expect this trend to continue, and we are on track to not only have zero net debt by 2021, but to have cash exceeding our debt. And lastly, with our balance sheet currently beginning to be de-risked, we will turn our attention to reinvesting cash in growth opportunities that will continue to strengthen the business and surface value for our shareholders. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. This concludes a part of our presentation. I would now like to open the lines up for questions.
Thank you. At this time, we'll be conducting a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 from your telephone keypad, and a confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants that are using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. And once again, that's star 1 to ask a question. Thank you. Our first question is from the line of Robert Pulvey with Mandalay. Please proceed with your questions.
Hey, guys. Congratulations on the great quarter and great. It's quite an accomplishment that you've turned the company around and made such tremendous progress. The first question I have is kind of a housekeeping question. Are you aware that that you guys have a spam sink for email inquiries to investor relations?
No, I did not realize that. We would appreciate if you could reach out to Edison with our investor relations.
Yes, I have. And he's been quite helpful, but half hour ago or so, just before the conference call started, I checked the website, and it's still info@mandalayresources.com. And I've alerted Edison to this problem. But I was wondering if you guys were wondering why you never got any questions from investors through the email. So
okay. No, thank you very much for highlighting that again, and we'll follow up and ensure that the situation is remedied.
Excellent. Okay, on to more important questions. Can you kind of give a little bit more color about the elevated all-in sustain costs over at Bjorkdale?
Yeah, so the main attributor to the increased costs in the fourth quarter, where we did have quite a bit further development, operational development in the first quarter, as we were developing quite a bit of yield, and there was very little capital during that period, capital development. So that pushed operating costs and subsequently the all-in sustaining costs. We also were winterizing, so preparing for the winter, and had some tailings work to do. So it was anomalous in the fourth quarter, and we were anticipating higher cash spend during that quarter, but I think you'll see in the first quarter of this year, you will see that the total costs are back online to what we were obtaining in the first three quarters, total overall operating costs.
Excellent. My next question regards Cerro Bayo in Chile. Do you know the approximate tonnage to be gone through of the tailings and how long that might last? I mean, might it last 6 months, a year and a half?
At the current time, it's only a trial processing, so we've scheduled in 3 months, trialing to see what the actual results are. These are actual waste dumps that were mined from the old Tytale pit and several others in the 90s. Quite a few years ago, a study was done to see if these waste dumps were leachable, and the results came back negative. More than anything, it is taking advantage of these current high silver prices and to see if these dumps can be profitable processing through our plant. So we anticipate we'll be passing through 1,400 to 1,500 tonnes per day. The program, if it is profitable, could be extended by quite a period because there are several million tonnes of these waste dumps still at Sorrel Bay. The margins will not be extremely significant, but we do anticipate that they will definitely cover the holding costs at Sorrel Bay, as well as giving some profit on top.
Well, if that could be accomplished, every little bit helps, and that would be excellent. Could that also perhaps serve as a catalyst to Equus to exercise their option contract on the property, perhaps?
Yeah, I can't speak 100% for what John and Equus's plans are, but I do speak to him regularly, and I am quite certain their business model is factored pretty much solely around Sorrel Bay, and that option expires at the end of this year. So I would be surprised if Equus does not realise on that option and purchase Sorrel Bay, and if they do, Mandalay becomes the largest shareholder of Equus. So for us, it is important to show that these waste dumps can be profitable, and it may be a catalyst for people beginning to see the value in Equus as well, which is a benefit to us.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
Getting close to the end of my questions here. On the balance sheet going forward, do you anticipate holding higher levels of cash in 2021, 2022 versus the past to prevent the financial problems that hit the company here, in 2019 and early 2020?
We definitely do intend to buy a cash balance. However, I do anticipate that will continue to grow substantially over the next 4.5 years. We have demonstrated how much cash we can generate while we are producing from the yule load at Costerfield. And we have 4.5 years at least of that production. And with the recent results, we've seen Chris getting down deep. I would anticipate that we'll continue to grow further. So I don't anticipate that we will have any financial concerns going forward. I anticipate that we will be growing our cash position. We do have still the significant debt of $59 million that we are paying down $3.8 million a quarter going forward. So we will be looking at what we do with that going forward as we become net debt free and have a lot more cash to play with. But our focus predominantly with the cash is maintaining a large cash balance and reinvesting in exploration. So we're starting to see the benefits of what that can do for the company with the smaller uplift in capital exploration in Costerfield last year. We not only replaced depletion, but added another year and a bit on top. And the results we're starting to see at Björkdal drilling into the lake zone and main zone down deeper, starting to get some phenomenal grades reporting back from that drilling. So we are seeing the success of putting money back into the ground, and that will be the priority with the amount of cash we are generating and growing our cash balance. But we definitely will keep a comfortable buffer.
Okay, excellent. And then my last question is, you guys have done such a tremendous job of turning the company around, and currently you're my single largest position. Do you have any plans to expand your promotion efforts going forward, you know, getting the word out to the investor community? Just seems
that
nobody knows about the company, unfortunately.
Yes, so it has flown under the radar for many investors, and we do, I think that is reflected in our current market capitalization. We will be attending a lot more conferences this year. We are definitely speaking to a lot of banks to try and get a lot more following. We do only have two analysts still. There has been a lot of hesitancy for banks picking up on our story, and that's to a large part that we haven't proven that this turnaround is permanent. I think we have shown that it is here for the long term now, with continuing to add reserves, especially at Costerfield. So we will be doing quite a bit to try and get the word out about Mandalay and how successful the company currently is and how much growth there still is in the company going forward. So,
Well, keep up the good work, and thank you guys for doing such a good job, and that's great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our next question is coming from the line of Kevin Tracy with Oberon Asset Management. Please proceed with your questions.
Thanks. I have a couple about the guidance at Costerfield. So the guidance for 53,000 to 60,000 gold equivalent ounces of production this year, now that compares to close to, say, 75 to 90 that you originally gave as part of your three-year guidance, you know, a couple of years ago. So I'm wondering if that kind of higher level of production, is that just been delayed into 2022, or is there something that's kind of changed about the, you know, Youle mine that means that production won't get to those levels?
Yeah, so that's easily explained. Back 2 years ago when we were planning for Youle, all that we had drilled out, we found the Youle deposit and had drilled out the main central high-grade core of Youle. That's where the focus was. And as you drill out further, we really had little information on that. Back from what the size of our reserves in Youle 2 years ago to what they are now, it's grown significantly because we have continued to drill out further into Youle, and it's grown laterally significantly. And as you go out further from the high grade core, the greater you are getting lower grades as the deposit slowly drops down, but they're still very profitable. So as a whole, it did drop the overall grades of Youle drilling out to the extents, but it did increase our reserves significantly. So that all it really was a timing issue with drilling to actually understand how much bigger the deposit was and what we had originally drilled out. In hindsight, we probably should have continued to drill out the whole deposit before reporting so many years ahead, but the net result is positive for us. We are the grade of that highest grade core of Youle has not dropped, but we have just added the extremities of the Youle lode as well, which drops a grade over the period but adds quite a few ounces.
Got it. Okay. And just more specifically on the exploration results and your plans for this year, I guess, do you expect to, again, replace more than 100% of production this year at Costerfield? And, you know, as far as Youle goes, what's your best guess at this point in time of what that mine life will ultimately be?
It's extremely hard to say. Suffice to say that our deepest hole was grading over 400 grams per ton. It was 11 centimeters narrow, but that's Youle. So we know that it's open at depth. It does appear to be moving into a different structure, but that's quite common in within Yule and all the deposits we've mined at Costerfield. So it's open at depth. I do not know to what depth it will go down. And we know that Fosterville is mining over a kilometre deep now. Our deepest hole is around about 600 metres down into Yule. I would anticipate that we will replace depletion, but it's very early on in the year to understand how much more we can add. We are continuing to drill browns as well, so the hope is that that will emerge into something that we can move into a resource this year and subsequently a reserve. We are attacking the actual Cuffley load again once again because of information that we've gathered from Yule and how it behaves at depth. We have Chris and his team has come up with a hypothesis of that the Cuffley load has moved into a different structure, which we did actually intercept several years ago, grading quite a wide intercept over a metre at, I think it was 11 grams. So that we're actually just starting drilling now and should be intercepting over the coming weeks. So there's a lot of money being put into exploration this year. So 6.8 million, more than we ever had previously in Costerfield. So I do anticipate we will be able to replace our reserves. But all that being said, a lot of our focus this year is not specifically aimed at reserve replacement. It's more aimed at target testing and actual pure exploration. Because I point back to the prior 10 years of Mandalay, almost the bulk of our drilling has been focused solely at infill drilling with very little target testing or generative drilling. I think over 10 years, we've struggled to drill even 10 million of that type of drilling. So this year, we're drilling $6.8 million worth of drilling, and the bulk of it is trying to find significant extensions to older deposits or finding brand new deposits such as Browns. So hopefully that answers it.
Yeah, no, thank you. And then lastly, on the cost guidance for Costerfield. Now, at the midpoint, it implies roughly $115, per ounce of higher costs relative to 2020. Now, by my math, the strengthening Australian dollar might account for half of that. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about, where the other increase is coming from, and if this cash cost guidance for 2021 is that a reasonable kind of expectation for 2022 and the years on as you continue to develop Yule?
So it is reasonable, I think. Costerfield is a little different to virtually every other mining operation in the world in that our stoping production is actually more expensive than development because of we have plant restrictions, so we mine the stopes as narrow as possible to decrease dilution. And because of relatively poor ground conditions in Costerfield, we have to backfill our stopes virtually after every blast using cemented rock fill and then reopen the stope. So development is quite simple for us, just advancing. Actual stoping does result in a higher operational cost when we are mining. And as Yule is transitioning more from becoming a development operation to over 50% of our production over the course of 2021 will be in stoping, that's where the bulk of our actual operating cost lift comes from. So if we do continue to grow the deposit at depth and have more operational development, a higher ratio of development than stoping, then we may see a slight decrease in costs over the course of the year.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much and congrats on a good year.
Excellent. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is coming from the line of Lawrence Cooney, a private investor. Please proceed with your questions.
Hey, Dominic. I just want to congratulate the team on the turnaround. I've been investing in Mandalay since 3 years ago, so I've ridden out the storm. So I have a series of questions, but I do have one comment about the investor relations point of contact. So I'm wondering if you could verify the phone number as well, because I haven't been getting any callbacks. Hello?
Yes, so the sorry. I don't have the actual number on hand. I would have to get back to you. I'll have Edison reach out to you, Lawrence.
Okay, thank you. I do have a series of small questions here, so I'll start off with the Björkdal mining operation. Last time we chatted on the quarterly call, I inquired about the ore sorter. Is there any consideration being put forth on that?
Yeah, so there is consideration, and that's going to be investigated over the course of 2021. So there's two, we do anticipate that we will be able to continue to lift our underground production from Björkdal, and there's two directions in which we can go at Björkdal, actually lifting the overall throughput through the processing plant. So we currently process and dispose 1.3 million tons per annum. We are permitted to process 1.7 million tons per annum. So over the course of 2021, we'll be looking at doing a study, looking at what is the best and most optimal method to upgrade Björkdal in the longer terms, because this is a we have the 10-year is in front of us, but this is an operation that's quite easy to continue to add additional reserves to this operation, so it'll be operating for much longer. So we do have a lot of room to upgrade the facility for larger ounce production on an annual basis and have it long term. So there's two main routes that we'll be looking at. That is upgrading the whole processing capacity or implementing the optical ore sorting. So we did do the feasibility study for the optical ore sorting 2 to 3 years ago, so we understand very well the total capital costs associated with that. We don't yet understand the total cost of upgrading the processing facility and that all that's involved mining-wise to be able to upgrade the total processing tonnage and underground feed significantly to understand the financial results of if we did that. So we do want to do a trade-off study between the two projects and look at how feasible they are before actually selecting in which direction Björkdal is going to go. And that's going to be the main focus of one of the studies at Björkdal this year. However, it won't be a capital investment we will be carrying out this year. Our main focus for exploration capital, capital this year will remain on exploration.
Okay, another question for the Björkdal mining operation. On the presentation, it mentioned deep drilling. Is that going to be similar to the deep drilling that occurred at Coffee and Youle?
Sorry, at Björkdal? No, not that deep. Definitely not. So it's an extension of the main zone and the lake zone. So when we did deeper drilling into Aurora, out to the northeast, we did start to see some pretty significant grade intercepts. And Chris and his Björkdal team, they've done a lot of extrapolation in investigating this and have found identified areas within the main and lake zone where we could see a similar occurrence of what we're seeing in around this Aurora zone back within those two areas. That's our primary focus at the moment, those two areas. Down deeper, and so they're not stepping down like 500 meters down below. It is following these vein structures, maybe 100 meters plus down deeper along. Chris did release on that a few weeks ago, our first results coming back from that, and that was mainly around the lake zone. We will be updating further with more information on the main zone over the coming months as well, where we're hoping to see repetitions of intercepting on average higher grades down deeper there.
Okay, so it's not going to be like a deep hole drilling like that?
No, definitely.
Okay.
So no. As we are drilling, this is also drilling deeper, but because of the whole dip of the deposit, it's going further to the northeast, and it is getting closer to actually another mining concession that we hold, which is Storheden. So we're getting closer to tying these two mining concessions together, where we're permitted to mine, and it is highlighting the interest and possibly following up on what was called the Storheden deposit, which if you'd like more information on that, we can discuss at another time.
Well, that's interesting, because that was kind of my next question. So I can understand your need to reassess the mill and determine how to increase its gold recovery and throughput. I'm going to sort of tack here towards more the M&A theme. I found an article, actually a press release from Manderley Resources back in 2013 when Brad was the CEO, and he was talking about divesting into copper mining with the La Quebrada permits in Chile. So I was wondering, with all this new cash coming in, where does Manderley see themselves going with M&A, and is there a possibility of getting into some more base metals to basically protect us against the interesting fluctuations in gold these days?
Yeah. So I'll start on La Quebrada. It's a very interesting one because it's copper, silver, which is where the trend of copper and silver with where it's going at the current time, that deposit is of more interest to us. And actually, Chris has recently just started reviewing the information at La Quebrada. Obviously, it has not been a high priority for us over the course of the last 2 years. My focus has been on our two operation assets to turn them around and become a successful company again. But now that we're in pretty stable position, we are going to be in looking at La Quebrada and what is the best way forward for that property. It is neighboring and operating open pit mine with their deposit continuing in the open San Jeronimo owned Tuga open pit. That area has been successful with the copper silver deposit. So we do want to understand that deposit a little better. And we do have the time now to begin investigating that to understand exactly what we're going to do with La Quebrada going forward, because there is value there, we see. In relation to M&A and getting into base metals, still the priority of Manderley is we are a precious metals producer, but we are not adverse to base metals as well, especially if they have a precious metals tinge to them. Our priority, though, over the course of 2021 is not on acquisitions and trying to find something to purchase, because we still do think there's a lot more shareholder value to be realized with our current production results and drilling into our own properties, both Björkdal and Costerfield, to get some more value into Manderley before actually moving into that transition of trying to grow externally. So unlikely over 2021, we do want to understand a little better what we have in Costerfield, which is why we're drilling so much more before we actually make any decisions and look at growing externally.
Okay, I just have two closing comments. So I guess my recommendation to Chris is to contact Brad Mills and find out and get as much as he can with regards to his notes based on this comment from the 23 press release. And just to close off, And thank you very much for the turnaround, and look forward to speaking to you again on the next quarter.
Great. Thanks, Lawrence.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star one at this time. Our next question comes from the line of Bernie Mulsh with PMG. Please proceed with your questions.
Hi, congratulations on an excellent quarter. Most of my questions have already been asked by other callers, but I do have a couple of questions on Costerfield. The recovery went up to 93.53%. Is that the result of the process improvements that you've implemented there?
Yeah, there's been some improvements, definitely, but the bulk of the improvements has been the type of mineralization that we have in your load. So it's a lot of free gold, so we are recovering a lot more gold in our gravity circuit. Up to 50% of our gold comes out in gravity now. Previously, for example, Brunswick was 25 to 30%, so that getting so much more in our gravity is lifting our recovery overall from the whole site. We are also, hopefully in March, we now have it on site, so hopefully we'll be commissioning in March the new cav tube flotation, so that we were anticipating a 2% lift in recoveries with that. Obviously that in recoveries have already improved so much since we started this CavTube project. We may not get up to 2% further improvement from the CavTube, but we do anticipate that definitely getting over 1.5% improvement further with this CavTube that should be commissioned in March. So because it's focusing on the very fine gold within our flotation circuit, almost all of our gold that goes to the tailings is microscopic, very fine gold. And the cav tube system that focuses on recovery of very fine gold. So that's where we expect to see our improvement, further improvements this year with already improved recoveries at Costerfield.
I see. Your hedges, are your hedges really making you money now? The perception on the part of most investors is that Mandalay Resources is in a void because of the hedges. So
yeah,
could you provide some color on the hedges?
So when we took out the hedges to try and de-risk it. We didn't want to, we had to take these hedges out with the refinancing of the credit facility, but to try and de-risk it, we decided to take it out in two currencies. So half of it was taken out in US dollars, so 25,000 ounces per annum with a ceiling of 1630 gold price, but the other 25,000 ounces was taken out in Aussie gold price. That at the time, because of the low exchange rate or the devalued Aussie dollar, we got that at $23.90 dollars per ounce that was locked in. And if you look at current Australian gold price, I think it's around about $22.70, so we'll be making around about $120 per ounce on that at the current time, losing possibly slightly more on the US. So it's close to break even, but with the Aussie exchange rate lifting, strengthening, that's becoming the margin with the Aussie hedge is becoming larger for us. So I think de-risking it by splitting the currencies was a good decision.
Now, is the gold that's hedged coming from Costerfield exclusively, or is it Björkdal and Costerfield?
Yeah, so the Aussie gold hedge is linked to Costerfield, and the US dollar hedge is linked to Björkdal.
I see. Okay. That explains that. Thank you very much. And congratulations on the excellent performance.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a follow-up from the line of Rob Plumpia with Mandalay. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, guys. Quick question. How close is Costerfield to Kirkland Lake's production areas?
It's approximately 30 kilometers away. So you've got Bendigo, then you go further to the east, hit Fosterville, and then continue along another 30 kilometers to the east, and that's where we are.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. At this time, we've reached the end of our question and answer session. I'll hand the call back to Dominic Duffy for closing remarks.
Yep. Excellent. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Before we disconnect, I'd just like to give a special thank you to all the Mandalay team for their excellent hard work and contributions to delivering these fantastic results in Q4 and 2020 as a whole. And I really look forward to updating the market on our progress as we go forward. So have a good day, everybody, and thank you.
Thank you. This will conclude today's conference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation. Mm-hmm.